The following podcast of SB Nation Radio is brought to you by BetDSI.com. With the NFL and college football seasons here, it's time to take that pigskin knowledge to the bank at BetDSI.com. With 20 years in the business, an impeccable reputation for great service, fast payouts, and an excellent mobile interface where you can play, win, and get paid, it's a no-brainer. BetDSI.com is the place to go. They have every wager option you could ever want or even imagine. And if you're watching a game, you can use BetDSI's live betting option to bet on the fly. Whether it's the NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, the NBA, the UFC, esports, global sports, or even politics, celebrities. I mean, really, it doesn't matter. Whatever you feel like betting on, BetDSI has it for you. You get started today with BetDSI, you can get some extra bang for your buck, too. They're offering double your money for your first deposit. That's right, deposit to start winning and get up to $2,500 free. That's double your money right from the get-go. So what are you waiting for? Double your bankroll right now by joining BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101. The games are more fun when you get paid, so play at BetDSI.com. That's BetDSI.com and use promo code NATION101.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We spent this time this morning talking about the AAF and its potential demise, but Eminem on Twitter says there's a key to the AAF's resurgence. On Twitter, he writes, please entertain this thought regarding the at AAF Iron, at AAF Express game. Allowing the players to actually fight would be key to the league's success. Like hockey, I would watch every game, even though there's no Detroit team yet. Hint, don't blow it. Sincerely, Marshall. So, two things about this tweet which I thought were interesting. One, Eminem is interested in getting into a league that just said yesterday that it's planning on dying. But two, he also wants one
in Detroit, because Detroit could definitely house another professional football team.
Yes. And but he also says that if you just let them fight, people would tune in. All right, well, let's give it a try.
Well, you know what? To be honest with you, that's really the XFL's.
That's the XFL's
area of expertise is fighting.
Yeah, that's Vince McMahon. And unlike the NFL, we're going to allow our players to fight and fight hard. They can punch, kick, and can do whatever they want.
I mean, they already have protective headgear. It's okay.
It's not like they're getting kicked in areas that aren't protected. XFL, we'll let them do anything they want.
We'll allow rabbit punches.
Exactly. I would love to see Eminem as an owner. Wouldn't that be great? Although I haven't been following him lately. I don't know what he's like now that he's in his, like,
he's
close
dead.
To 50. Right? Well,
not close. Is he really? Don't say that. I don't want to believe he's close
to
50.
You are in a time warp. How old do you think Eminem is?
Isn't he 20?
He's 46 years old.
46 years old. Okay, so that's not close to 50.
Yes, it is.
That's still far away from 50.
What's close to 50? 49 and a half?
Exactly.
He's 46.
46, all right. Okay, that you know, he's not 50 yet.
Remember that little girl he used to talk about? She's like a 20-something-year-old girl.
Yeah, she's a model.
Yeah. Listen, time flies. And then we have to put up with that. We have to come to that realization. All right, coming up, what about the XFL? What about the AAF's demise? Do we really need this? That's coming up next on SB Nation AM.
I'm all right. Nobody but about me. Why you got to give me a fight? Can't you just let it be?
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, celebrating sports movies. 1977, Rocky won Best Picture. This is Caddyshack.
Yes, it is.
So, Caddyshack's one of the all-time classic movies.
You can picture the gopher dancing right now.
I can picture the gopher dancing. That's absolutely right. So the AAF is about a week away from its demise. The XFL is coming, though. The XFL is coming back.
Hold on one second. Can't the AAF just finish out the season?
That's what I wonder. Don't they just have enough money to finish this thing? I mean, listen, they've got Steve Spurrier down there ready to win another championship.
Can't take that away from Spurrier.
You can't take that away from Spurrier. Spurrier would be, he would use that in every conversation about being disappointed. Well, disappointed, but not as disappointed as one where the Apollos didn't get a chance for the title. Y'all remember that? I love Spurrier. I want him to win. He's got the best team in the AAF right now. High flying fun down in Orlando. But nevertheless, the league is on its demise, and I just not surprised whatsoever. Listen, you don't have to be a math genius, and I am not, to figure out the cost of what's going on here, right? This football team, football stuff, plane rides, trucking equipment, all of those things that you do with a football team, you're doing it on a smaller level. You are also competing for local dollars. In order to be successful at this, you have to compete for local dollars. You're only going to get so much money from television revenue for who you are, so you're going to compete with sponsorships. Now, if you're the Memphis Express, for example, you're going up against the Memphis Grizzlies and you're going up against the Memphis Tigers athletic programs. Okay, that's maybe not a huge pot. But, you know, if you're in Orlando, it's the same kind of thing. Businesses in Orlando are going after the Magic. There's the Florida Gators. You can do Florida State. You can go down to Tampa and do the Buccaneers. Go to Jacksonville and advertise with the Jaguars. There's many of different ways that you can spend your dollars. And are the Apollos worth it? All right, maybe they are. I don't know. But it's not a surprise. They were trying to get the NFL to step in and become a feeder league for the development league for the league, for the NFL. But if I'm in the NFL, and we were touching on this earlier, is this something the league needs? Like, does the league need a developmental league? Now, you made a very good point. Colleges already do that because the NFL has this rule that says you can't go to the NFL right out of school. You have to spend 3 years post-graduation doing something, but you can't go right to the NFL. That develops players in the college program. Now, the NFL doesn't have a direct say in how those players are developed, which is a little different. But yeah, that's true. Good point. Right. But the reality of it is, if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, if I draft a guy, I need him. I need him to play.
You're drafting towards a guy who already fits your scheme.
Exactly. So, I need him.
I mean, it's maybe you didn't have a direct influence on developing said player or, you know, had an influence on developing that school. But if that player embodies exactly what you're envisioning, like I need him to hold his hands this way, if he's a blocker, you know, if he's an offensive guy, I need him to hold his hands this way. I need him to, you know, pull this way. If you can see all that, and for you, then it's like, okay, well, he's been developed to my liking, my style.
Yeah, exactly. And in baseball, for example, you see a high school kid, you draft him, but you know, like, hey, I'm going to put him in the minors a couple of years, and I'll get him up in a couple of years, but I own his rights. I just want him when I can get him now, and then we can develop him, and then when he really becomes old enough to be a baseball player, a major league baseball player, we'll have him. Same with hockey. You see this all the time in hockey. It's so weird in hockey, too, because I never got an answer to this question, and it's like that in baseball, I think. I think in baseball it's like that, too, but I definitely know in hockey. If you go to a college hockey game, you will see players listed and you will see on the roster the NHL team in which they're attached to. Like they were drafted, but they're still allowed to play college hockey because they haven't gotten paid, but their rights belong to the Ottawa Senators or the Boston Bruins or whatever, and they continue to play college. And I think in baseball it's the same way. Like I think if I'm the Yankees and I draft you, but you want to stay playing at Florida, I still retain your rights. I'm not paying you any money because I can't pay you when you go play at Florida, but you don't belong to anybody else. You ain't going to play for anybody else. I own the rights to your services at the baseball level. But we don't do that in football or basketball. Like no one can draft Zion Williamson until he declares. And when he declares, now there's a rule, you know, that you can go back if you're, you know, whatever. But the old days used to be you declared and that was it. That was it. You're done. And so the XFL coming in, I don't think they have any wanting to attach themselves to the NFL in any shape or form. I think they just want to be their own thing and play football in whatever method they want to play. But I think the AAF was a real legitimate shot at trying to be like, not necessarily a minor league system, but can we do something where the NFL is going to enter it and be a participant in what we're doing, which goes against what we always had believed about this league in the first place, right? That they weren't going to be a developmental league, that they didn't want to be a developmental league. They just wanted a relationship with the NFL where they could get players to come down and play for them, you know, if they needed some work, right? So you had a player, he needed a little work, he goes to work for the AAF. But I'll be honest with you, I don't think that would have saved the league. I don't think that saved the league at all. We're not talking about elite players. We're not talking about must-see guys. We're seeing guys who flamed out, didn't make it, and have got a lot of work to do. That's not going to sell tickets. So what if the starting quarterback of your football team used to be the starting quarterback of the Jets? He's not the starting quarterback of the Jets anymore. Right? I mean, look, Johnny Manziel is selling tickets because it's a show, right? What does Johnny Manziel have? It's kind of neat, et cetera, et cetera. But let's be honest. I mean, Johnny Manziel's not an NFL player. So you're not watching an NFL player hone his craft. You're watching a guy trying desperately to get back into the league if that's what he wants to do. Right? This thing really was a failed business plan from the very beginning.
Yeah, that was part of the problem with the AAF is that a lot of the players that they have were guys who just couldn't cut it and just couldn't make it. I mean, if you want to throw developmental in there, there's certain talents that you can't develop because you've already tried, like a Johnny Manziel or Trent Richardson. He had his moment in the sun, and you know teams just shy away from him now. And I don't think there's anything he could do to rectify. You know, being brought on by a team in the NFL now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I learned this the hard way. When I was working in minor league basketball, we had an assistant coach, and he hired me and my wife, who's really good at design and whatnot. He wanted to put together a scouting report of the league, right? And he paid us like $1,000 to give him this information. And I did research on these players, like give him statistics and whatnot, and he would write the scouting report for these players that were in the league. And then my wife typed it up and she designed it, used pictures and stuff on page editor, whatever she was using at the time. And we put together the scouting report that he sold to the NBA teams. And I'm not kidding. In the scouting reports, he would say, this is an NBA level player, right? He would say, this is an NBA level player. You know how many of them went to the NBA? Zero. Zero went to the NBA. That's how hard it is to get to the NBA. That he would be pointing out these guys are NBA level talents. They take a look at them, but still would find enough flaws. Now imagine if you have 53 football players on a team with 32 teams. Are you really, really going to develop the next, name your star, Antonio Brown in the AAF? No, Antonio Brown has already been developed, right? He's going to be developed at the NFL level. The NFL scouts are already pegging a potential there, and they're going to utilize that immediately, right? I'm not saying that you can't find a star, but the NFL works in a way that, look, we're not thinking 2-3 years down the road. We're thinking today, right? If 2 or 3 years, you might be irrelevant. You better be able to produce now. You had 3-4 years of college to figure out how to get to this level.
Yeah, I guess the
and
only
you better
position,
produce now.
The only position now in the NFL where development is really the word used would be at the quarterback position.
Right.
You know, that's the only position I can think of. You know, listen, Trevor Lawrence comes out, he's gonna be number one overall pick. Everyone's salivating for him now. As soon as he gets into the league, especially during preseason, he might start the first game of that NFL season. But during that preseason, they're going to be developing him into the quarterback they want.
Exactly. No, exactly. Right.
And that's really the only position I can think of. Like, if you're a running back, it's like either you can run and, avoid being tackled or not.
And again,
catch the ball in the backfield. Can you do it or not?
But here's the other thing, right? I can totally understand where the NFL or the Players Association was saying, wait. Because remember, I think we talked about this when they were talking about that the players' union, it's not like, this isn't as simple as the players' union going, yeah, take our guys. The players' union is like, what's the compensation? What's the insurance? What's the payout plan if one of our guys does get hurt? Like, there's a whole bunch of legalism here that was probably not to the satisfaction of the Players Association or the NFL in terms of who was up for the costs of any type of major injury to one of these players, right? Like, who would be responsible for the payment of a player who got hurt? There's a payment settlement.
Well, what about insurance? Who pays for that? Who's taking care of those things? What, like, all right, is the are your trainers that on your team, are they approved by us? Because he's our guy and you're taking care of our guy. I mean, it's not as easy as it sounds. It could have been done, but I'm sure at one point, a few of these details did not get matched up with the other side. And they said, no, this is not how we're going to work it. And you're not going to leave my guy off. You know, you're not going to kill my guy's career. Because if you're an agent and your guy gets hurt in an NFL game or hurt in an AAF game without proper insurance protection, which one would you rather get hurt in? All right, there are injury settlements in the NFL that are pretty nice. I doubt there's even one in this league. Right? I think if you get hurt in this league, it's probably, well, good luck to you. You got insurance, right? That's probably it. I mean, I think, and this is just my thought, I think this whole idea of dumping $250 million into this was in hopes that the NFL would buy into it, would put money into it and make it so viable that your $250 million investment turns into an annual return forever, right? Listen, I'll give you a quick story. I worked in the what they called the new ABA. Remember the old ABA with the red and white basketball back with Dr. J and the Spirit of St. Louis and all that? Well, there was a new ABA, and it was called ABA 2000 because came in 2000. I was a young kid, and I was in the International Basketball League, and then I joined the ABA 2000, and we merged with the IBL to create one super minor league team, whatnot. The franchise price to get in on a team at that time was a dollar, okay? And it was, you would buy the franchise for a dollar, then you picked up all the costs. You'd get an office, you'd hire staff, you pay for the office stuff. All right, so you would have these guys come in that had money, that significant money, and they would buy these franchises. They'd buy them for a buck, they'd own the city, they'd own the rights to the city, and they'd put this team together. The whole reason that these guys did that was they were hoping that their maybe $200,000 startup investment would turn into the NBA actually making it a development league, right? That was the goal, that the NBA would say, we're not starting our own development league. We're actually going to put one together, like pick up yours, and we will pay for this stuff and give you money for your franchises that you paid for a dollar. And then we'll buy them for $100,000 and, you know, $1 million, whatever it was. We'll take care of these cities. We will now own these cities as minor league teams. That was the plan. That was the business plan. It didn't come about. It didn't come to fruition because not soon after we started the season, the NBA announced their development league, their own development league in places like Huntsville and Asheville and places like that. You know what happened after that? Our league went wham, wham, wham. Checks were bouncing. Nobody was getting paid. Distributors were yelling at us. Vendors were coming back to us. You printed these shirts. No one was getting a check. Owner couldn't be found. I mean, it was a disaster. I think that's what's going on here. I think this guy, again, got a lot of money, owns the Carolina Hurricanes, but I think he was looking at it like, hey, listen, $250 million, I'll put it in this league. If the NBA buys in, I'll probably make the money back and I'll probably have a residual income, investment income from this. And it sounds like a pretty good deal. But then the NFL, the players are like, I don't know if we can get a deal together. And now what does he do? Well, instead of saying we're going to make it work, his first reaction is it's over. All right, coming up next, what this date in sports history means to you, me, and everybody else who loves college basketball. Next.
Try to be best, because you're only a man, and a man's got to learn to take it. Try to believe, though the going gets rough, that you got to hang tough to make it. History repeats itself, try and you succeed. Never doubt that you're the one.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
From Karate Kid as we celebrate sports movies on Throwback Thursday. And you can earn awards reports online at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. Earn points any way you shop at O'Reilly Auto Parts. You'll receive a $5 reward for every 150 points you earn. Earn orewards.com. Visit orewards.com and become an O'Reilly O'Rewards member today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. All right, so on this date in 1992, if you're a college basketball fan, okay, if you're a sports fan, you might have remembered this little gem.
A quick pass to half court and call a quick timeout so they can get in better shooting range. There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
And there you go. Christian Leitner, the shot. It's an iconic college basketball slash sports moment. Leitner that day was perfect from both the floor and the free throw line as Duke beat Kentucky 104-103. Sean Woods of Kentucky had driven up to the top of the, about the top of the key and hit a shot that put Kentucky up for good. And it was an important moment for Kentucky basketball because Kentucky had just come off probation and they were starting to get their feet wet back in the tournaments and getting their feet wet back to being national prominence, right? And Rick Pitino was leading the Wildcats, Jamal Mashburn at the time. Duke was still Duke. They were the, I believe at the time, the defending national champs yet because they had won in 91. So they were looking for back-to-back titles, which they would do against the Michigan Wolverines. But Leitner was one of the most hated athletes in sports. Forget college basketball, in sports. And if you were a fan of Duke, you loved it because everybody was anti-Duke so fervently. It was incredible. But Leitner was the right guy hitting this shot. He had done this before. He had beat UConn with the buzzer beater one time before. This was just too much to take. I'll tell you where I was that night. I remember I was at a hockey game with my father. We were in Hartford watching a Blackhawks Whalers hockey game. And the, I think Duke was leading at the time in the game. And it wasn't just, we were watching. And I'll never forget because my father and I were sitting and we're just having a good time watching the game. And all of a sudden this guy comes into the concourse and he's got some buddies that are sitting higher than us. And he looks up and he goes, "Hey, Duke, Kentucky, overtime." All of a sudden, everybody starts moving into the concourse. Now,
that's us. It's a town crier just walking right? through.
And so,
hey, yay, hey, yay.
Right? It was unbelievable. And it was the cool thing about that game, right? About being there in that arena for the hockey game at the time. So the way the Hartford, I don't want to say Civic Center. I don't remember the name of it. But the way the arena was that every other TV, if you walked around it, every other TV had the basketball game, and then every other TV had the hockey game. And there was just gigantic crowds on every other television watching Duke, Kentucky in the overtime period. And so they're lining up for the final shot. And I mean, listen, I'm not a basketball savant or anything like that, but I love basketball. I just can't play it. That's my thing. I could never play basketball. And even I realized, hey, wait a minute, they're not guarding the inbound pass.
Yeah.
There's nobody on the line to give Grant Hill even just a hey, lift my hands. Like, you can't see the guy. Hey, look at me. You're going to have to throw it over my hands. And, right? There was nothing like that. Pitino thought it would be better to go 5-on-4, right? But you needed somebody to thwart the pass. He got a perfect look to Leitner at the top of the key. You can't give him that. Now, Pitino's words were, don't foul, right? Be careful, don't foul. You can watch Kentucky guys just stand because they were afraid to foul him. They didn't want to challenge Leitner with the ball. They didn't want to send him to the line. He was perfect from the line that day.
Yeah, even when Leitner put up the shot, you can see him. You don't even have to watch the video. You can just picture the guy who was marking him. First of all, he was standing behind him.
Right.
I don't get that either. Didn't want him to turn around. Right. Let him catch the ball, but just don't turn around.
Right.
But you can. I remember vividly. I mean, you can see it. He just has his hand straight up. He looks like a capital I, or just an I.
Exactly. He's not moving.
He just has his feet firmly planted. Maybe he was hoping for a charge or something. I don't know. But he just has his hand straight up and didn't even jump.
Yeah, doesn't jump. And so the thing about that moment, which really always bothered me, was the legend of Mike Krzyzewski had already been, in our conscience, right? He had Duke at that super high blue blood level already, right? And he had one of the best teams in college basketball, defending national champs. But the legend grows even more when we find out later that when he gathers his guys after Woods makes the shot and he gathers his guys, the first thing he says to them is, "We're going to win this game, okay?" And everybody goes, "Okay." So here's his play. So he's drawing up a plan. He's like, "Okay, we're going to get the ball. And Grant, you're going to throw it to Leitner. Christian, I need you to just turn around and just knock it down like you've been doing all night. All right, that's the plan." Pitino's plan was, "Hey, what we're going to do is we're going to get Christian Leitner. We're going to let him catch the ball and then pray to God that he misses the shot. Does that sound good to everybody? Is everybody good with that? Okay, ready, break." Because that's exactly what happened.
I can get on board with that. Yeah.
Right? Like, imagine you're up by one against Duke, and your coach's plan was, all right, we're not going to do anything to prevent Leitner from catching the ball, and we're really not going to do anything for making Leitner shoot the ball. So what we want to do is appeal to the gods of basketball that Leitner, for the first time all night, misses a shot. You guys all good with that?
Because we're right and they're wrong.
Right, exactly. Because we're Kentucky and they're Duke. All right? Is that good for everybody? Because that would work for me. Still, it's one of those sports moments that for years, it was like the Buckner ball through Buckner's legs. People watch that praying for a different ending. It's like the Bartman play, right? Like you just pray Moises Alou actually catches that ball and the Cubs win. But it was the same thing. It's like you watch it over and over again. You're like, please, please, doesn't Leitner miss that shot? Like he's got to miss that shot, right? Like there's no way. It's one of the best moments in sports. Kentucky would go on to the Final Four the next year. They would not win the national title again, national title until... I want to say 96, but 94 they went to the Final Four. But that was their moment to get right back into the swing of things and upset the defending national champs and win the hearts of America, but they failed to do so. Thanks, Christian.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
We're celebrating sports movies. On this date in 1977, Rocky won Best Picture. So we decided to do the themes from sports movies. This is Tin Cup. This is a golf movie. You know, we could lead into college basketball with Mike Rutherford, SB Nation, covering the tournament. Mike, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
Good. Did you like Tin Cup, the movie? Did you see it?
I did see it. I am hit or miss on Tin Cup.
All right.
good, not great.
All right, Mike, I've been asking this question all week, and we've got great matchups. We got ones and fours and threes and twos, and we got pretty much all chalk. But overall, Mike, is this tournament missing something now because there isn't a fun, young Cinderella from nowhere that's missing in this tournament?
I think it depends on what what makes a perfect tournament for you. If it's all about the Cinderella, if it's about the Loyola Chicago, if it's about the Sister Jean storyline, then yeah, if you want to see the Titanic, Blue Blood, best teams in the country go at it in the second weekend and then hopefully again in the Final Four, then this is kind of your tournament. You sacrifice that exciting opening weekend for matchups like the ones we're going to get tonight and tomorrow. And, I mean, I think the best possible tournament always has one or two Cinderellas, and then the other, I guess, five or six Sweet 16 games are all ones, fours, or twos, threes. So that's kind of my perfect tournament. So I think it's missing a little bit. I mean, Oregon is not a legit Cinderella. They were preseason top 15. They've got all that talent. They're a power conference team. They've won 10 games in a row. So I don't really buy them just because they're a 12 seed. So my answer would be yes. I think some other people would push back. But I would like to see one or two of those fun mid to low major teams make it this far and just have somebody for the little guy to root for.
All right, let's go to tonight's games, I should say. And let's go with Florida State. I know there's some emotion with Phil Coffer and the death in his family, but I want to talk about how good they're playing right now against a Gonzaga team. We know how good they are, but Florida State went under the radar for a lot of us. How good are the Seminoles playing at this moment?
They're fantastic. I mean, when you go back to mid-January, which is when they really got Phil Coffer back, and I know he's out now, like you said, they've only lost twice. They've lost two games over that time span, basically 2 months and a week. And the losses were at North Carolina and to Duke in the ACC title game, arguably the two best teams in college basketball. They've been fantastic over that span. They were fantastic last weekend. They've got one of the best players in the country that nobody really talks about, in Fiondo Cavagnelli, who comes off the bench. I don't know why Leonard Hamilton does that. He's tremendous, but he's been playing at the best of his ability the last couple of weeks. Terrence Mann's been around forever. He's terrific. Trent Forrest is legit. They've got experience. They've been in this position before. They played in the Elite Eight last year. They came within a couple shots of beating Michigan and going to the Final Four. They beat Gonzaga in this very round, in this very region last season. So they've got that experience on their side as well. And they, like UCF, which gave Duke such issues last weekend, they've got that advantage that so few teams have, which is just an absolute monster in the middle. Chris Kumaji, 7'4". That's something that you can't really prepare for. So I think they've got a lot going for them, and they're playing offense at a rate that we didn't see from them at many times this season. They're going to give Gonzaga all they can handle.
What's the feeling about Gonzaga? I mean, they're long past 20 years ago being a Cinderella. They've become one of the best teams in college basketball over the last not only few years, but a lot of years. But they've yet to win a title, and I know this is a hard tournament to win, but is there any pressure within the program to finally go over that hump, cross the Rubicon, and actually win a championship?
I mean, I don't know if there's pressure in terms of them getting the national respect like they feel they deserve. I think there's pressure in terms of it being the one thing they haven't done. Because like you said, they finally, a couple of years ago, got into the Final Four. I think they bucked that narrative of, you know, they just can't get it done in March. And you have seen people change the way they treat them a little bit. There's still a little bit of that, well, they don't play anybody in the season. They you know, haven't won at all. Talk to you when you win a national title. But that's been decreased significantly since they made that Final Four run in 2017. So I guess if you're looking at Gonzaga and saying, what's the one thing they haven't done, and it's cut down the nets, then maybe there's pressure on them in that regard. But I don't think Mark Few really views it that way. I will say this is probably his best shot. I think they are better this year than they were 2 years ago. I think these were better than the Adam Morrison teams, better than the teams in 2013, 2014, the 2013 one that was a top seed, which got beat by Wichita State. I think this is his best shot, and it's kind of a shame for them. They've probably got the toughest route to the Final Four of all the one seeds left, and a lot of that's because they play Florida State, who we just talked about. But they're really, really good. They could definitely win it all, but you know, we'll see what happens. They look pretty good last weekend, but that St. Mary's game is still fresh in a lot of people's minds.
All right, let's go to the Tennessee-Purdue game. And I love Tennessee. I love their guards. I like their seniors. I've been watching them play all year. But are they good defensively if Carson Edwards gets off, starts hitting threes, and starts scoring like he did against Villanova? Is Tennessee good defensively to contain that at least to a point where that Purdue doesn't take over the game?
They're better than Villanova. And Villanova, if you watch that game, you know, I love Jay Wright. I love that talent. But at some point, you start guarding the guy who's made 7 3-pointers.
Right.
I mean, I didn't really, it was a bold strategy to let him keep shooting, and they just kind of let him kept going. And he ended up setting an XL Center record for the most threes in one game. So I don't think he's going to do that. I think they'll make somebody besides Carson Edwards beat them. And that's comforting if you're a Volunteer fan, because Purdue's not a one man team by any stretch, but they rely more heavily on Carson Edwards than any team relies on one single player in the Sweet 16, besides maybe Texas Tech and Jared Culver on offense. But Texas Tech can obviously beat you. The matchup for Tennessee. I feel pretty good about them being able to slow down Edwards.
All right, let's go to Texas Tech and Michigan. All right, defensive battle here? What do we got between these two teams?
Yeah, it's absolutely a defensive battle. These are the top two defensive teams. If you look at Ken Pomeroy's defensive efficiency rankings, you've got two of the best coaches in the country, and Chris Beard, who now I think everybody is knowing all about, and John Beilein, who's established himself as this March star. I still think it's going to be a fun game. I mean, maybe if you have to be constantly stimulated with up-and-down play and all these three-pointers, maybe it's not going to be. But these two teams, it's not like they don't execute in the half court. It's not like they're just clanging shots and winning games 45-40. They've got decent offensive talent. Brazdeikis is going to be an NBA player for Michigan. Jared Culver's probably going to be a top 10, maybe top 5 pick this summer. He's really, really good. To see that kind of war, that chess match between these two coaches, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But, yeah, if you're looking at the overarching storyline, it's that these are the two best teams left in the Sweet 16 and the two best teams in all of college basketball.
All right, Mike Rutherford joins us, SB Nation, talking some college basketball. The Sweet 16 tonight, 4 games on the slate, 4 games Friday. Oregon, what do the Ducks have? Do the Ducks have anything that they need to do against a Virginia team that knows how to play defense? But is there anything that Oregon is got that could be a weapon against the Cavaliers?
Yeah, I think they do. I think they've got length and athleticism, which is sometimes when Virginia struggles offensively, it's because teams can defend them really well. And Oregon's got guys like Kenny Wooten, who's a freak athlete. He's kind of like Jordan Bell, who they had a couple of years ago when they made the run of the Final Four reincarnated. They've got Lewis King, who's finally playing up to his potential. They've got Peyton Pritchard, who can run the show offensively. He's been as good as he's been all year these last couple of weeks. So they've got Ehab Amin has been fantastic as well, the grad transfer. They've got enough skill to play with a team like Virginia. I know it's kind of a cliche to say they're not your usual 12 seed, but again, they were the preseason number 14 team in the country. And I know that was when they had Bol Bol, but they still got a significant amount of talent on this roster. So I think they absolutely can give Virginia some struggles. Virginia should take care of business, but we've said that about them before. So I think it's a little bit of a scary matchup if you're a UVA fan.
Let's go to some games on Friday. Looking at Kentucky-Houston, and I like Houston a lot, but Kentucky without P.J. Washington, what is that difference in the Wildcats if he's not on the court?
I think it's a huge difference, and I think you've seen it in the last couple of weeks. The other big guys they've got are all good. I mean, Reed Travis was fantastic in the game against Wofford. E.J. Montgomery was a big-time recruit. Nick Richards was a big-time recruit. None of them are as offensively reliable as P.J. Washington is. He's a guy who, if you throw it to him just about anywhere inside the three-point line, he can get you a bucket. Reed Travis is more of a physical bruiser around the paint. Montgomery Richards can struggle offensively. Washington is the only reliable guy, I think, offensively out of that quartet. And against Houston, which doesn't have a traditional big, doesn't have a guy that I think matches up, he could really exploit that team. And without him, I think you're just banking on the other four guys being good enough to go up against Houston offensively. A little bit of a dangerous prospect if you're a UK fan. He's their best player. He was one of the best players in the SEC this past season. Not having him, you can probably get by Houston. I don't know if you can advance further than the Elite Eight if you don't have P.J. Washington back on the floor.
I want to talk about Auburn because Bruce Pearl said something I thought was right on the money. Because, you listen, I know they weren't playing Kansas of old. I get that. But he said, look, we were better. And if you ask Bill Self, he would say the same thing. They're riding a 10-game win streak. How dangerous are the Tigers when they're going up against a very versatile team like North Carolina?
They're super dangerous. And they're super dangerous because they have that recipe, that DNA for a big-time upset, which is they take a lot of threes and they make a lot of threes. They've taken more threes as of right now than any power conference team in at least a decade, which is it's significant. And if you make some of those, then you're feeling pretty good about your chances to upset a Carolina team that's going to get up and down. I mean, this is one of those games, because Auburn lives and dies by the three so much, you could see this game being, 95-94. Or if Auburn's having one of its games where it's missing, you can see Carolina winning this game like 95-70. I think both of those two outcomes are very much in play, but they can score with UNC. And there are very few teams in the tournament, whether it was at 68 or now at 16, who could say that. So they're playing as well as anybody. If they keep going with Bryce Brown and Jared Harper and all those guys, and they're hitting from the outside, they absolutely could win that game. But they could also get embarrassed. It's just going to come down to which Auburn's showing up, which guys are hot, and where they're getting the shots from the outside that they're looking for.
All right, Duke against Virginia Tech. I expect Duke will win this game, but Ty Outlaw could be out for the Hokies. Big deal, little deal, no deal for the Hokies.
It's a big enough deal that it matters, just because against a team like Duke, you've got to have every piece that you have. I still think he's going to play. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I know he put out a statement this morning. I know his mom put out a statement this morning. We'll see what happens on that front. It is good that they've got Justin Robinson back. I know they beat Duke without Justin Robinson, but that was also Duke without Zion Williamson.
Right.
I think it's a big enough deal. But Virginia Tech's big thing is, like UCF, they force you to take threes. That's obviously been Duke's Achilles heel all season long. If Kerry Blackshear's playing well on the inside, that can slow down the penetration of Zion and R.J. Barrett. I don't think it's a great matchup for Duke, but I don't think it's a fantastic matchup for Virginia Tech either. I'll say Duke wins, but I'll say they fail to cover again.
I thought I was going to let you go, but I figured I only did 7 out of the 8 games, so I might as well wrap it up with LSU-Michigan State. So give us your thoughts on the Tigers and Spartans.
I mean, I love this. You've got Tom Izzo, one of the greatest March coaches of all time, going up against LSU, a team that literally doesn't have a coach. And, we've never had a story like this. They are really talented. They are really good. They've got no head coach. I think they're arguably, they're more talented than Michigan State, but I think you've got to roll with the Spartans just because, hey, they've got Tom Izzo. I think he can make the moves necessary to win that game. But if LSU wins, I'll say this. It would be a fantastic storyline for the Elite Eight.
Oh, it's absolutely incredible. All right, Mike, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the tournament. Good catching up with you, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Again, Mike Rutherford joins us, SB Nation College Basketball. We just did all 8 games coming up Friday and Saturday, and giving you a little bit of preview. Ty Outlaw, I agree with him a little bit. Ty Outlaw is not a huge deal for the Hokies, but it's big enough that they're going to need everybody if they're going to beat Duke. And that's it. P.J. Washington, if he's out, I think Houston's going to win that game. I think Houston can win that game even with P.J. Washington in it. I think they're that good. But Kentucky with P.J. Washington is excellent. If he's out because he's got a foot sprain, he's missed the first two games of the tournament, that's a big. That's going to be a big loss as these games get tighter and tighter.
Now,
and
is it too late for Virginia Tech to bring on a new player?
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
true.
Like a 7'6" guy.
That's right. Right, exactly. In the transfer protocol.
In the transfer protocol. Doesn't that just...
Oh, yeah. Transfer portal. I say portal, protocol, yeah, but it's portal. Portal. It's portal.
Transfer
yeah.
portal. I mean, that can be instantaneous now, right?
That's right. That's right. Oh, goodness gracious.
Because they're going to need help.
On Twitter, Robert says, ABA genuine throwback Thursday. Yeah, it was. I loved it. I want my 1 year in it. The red and white basketball being back was kind of fun. Big day in Michigan with NCAA hoops. Certainly is Michigan, Michigan State coming up. It's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Well, I mean, you said it to start off the show that we always look for the Cinderella team. But this is really what we want.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. This is what we're looking for. I mean, this is – I want these matchups. These matchups are all good. They could go either way. You wouldn't be surprised in any scenario. Well, you might get surprised Oregon over Virginia, but I don't even think I'd be blown away by it.
I wouldn't be surprised over Oregon. Oregon almost, or Virginia almost repeated history.
Yeah, exactly.
They were down at the half against Gardner-Webb.
This Auburn team beating North Carolina would not shock me
not at all.
At all, this Auburn team is really good. All right, coming up, we'll wrap up and get you more thoughts on college basketball as we continue on SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Throwback Thursday, as we celebrate sports movie themes. What's this one? I got it.
Yeah, I know you
Days
know
of
it.
Thunder?
Ah, close. Not even close.
Not even close.
Yeah, Happy Gilmore.
Oh, Happy Gilmore, yeah. Why? Oh, shoot, yes. That's right. Good stuff. Throwback Thursday, 1977. By the way, today is Happy Atlanta Falcons Day, 3/28.
Yes. Yes, you're not going back to Atlanta anytime soon.
I saw that from a friend of mine, and I said, I've been waiting all show to do that. Thought I would do it, in our final segment of this hour.
on our way out the door, just
I'm
in
not
case.
Even a pa- I'm not even a Patriots fan, and just threw it out there. 3/28. God.
Will that never not be a thing?
No, you can't.
You can't, right? Listen, that's got to go on forever and ever.
I grew up in New England when the Red Sox lost that World Series in 86, and it was something that Red Sox fans could not come to grips with. They made a movie about it, right? I mean, they just could not come to grips with it forever and ever. I think if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan, you're up 28-3 late in the second half. I mean, like going into the, late in the third quarter, going into the fourth quarter, and you lose that game, you lose that Super Bowl. Yeah, you may never get there again. Happy Atlanta Falcons Day, SB Nation AM.